Pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. Nathan has tragically fallen ill once again, and I am joined by Mr. Kyle and Mr. Scott West, who works with Kyle there at Imaginary Wars Games and Hobbies in Calgary, Alberta. Hello, gentlemen.
Howdy.
Hello.
This episode is Dana approved, which means Scott gets to stay over if he's far too hammered to go home. And from what I hear, there's bottles of scotch downstairs.
Indeed there is. I am sucking back a Speyburn 10-year-old scotch tonight.
Oh, that was courtesy.
You can't go wrong with the Glenlivet 12.
Yeah, and Scott, who can't handle peatiness at all, is suckling up to the Glenlivet 12 years.
It's an apt term.
I am drinking no ice, no water, straight Glenfiddich 15-year, which is actually, I don't know, for some reason, this is the one that I kind of look at and go, you know what, it just doesn't need ice. I'm happy with it the way it is.
It should be noted tonight that the scotch is more of a chaser for us because we started the night off with spiced mead.
Oh, God. Were you LARPing?
Verily, yay.
Wonderful.
I mean, huzzah.
Huzzah. So, yes, this is Jaded Gamercast. Let's talk a little bit about what we did this week in hobby. I'll go ahead and start us off. I've been painting Firestorm Armada. The new book is set to be released in July, and I plan on starting a new fleet in July as well. There's been a lot of new releases, so I know that I need to finish my directorate. So I've got 3 ships left, and I am done, son, so I'm pretty happy about that. Playing some Warhammer. Like I said, I beat Nathan last week. I'll throw it out there one more time. Why not? What about you guys?
Let's see. I've opened up a blister pack of Firestorm Armada.
Hey!
Talk about progress. Holy crap. I've primed up some heavy gear stuff, and I'm getting together a 40K tournament. So that's basically my hobby involvement in a nutshell right there.
Go ahead and pump that 40K tournament real quick.
Well, it's already full, so I don't know how much I should pump it, but we're basically, Imaginary Wars is running a grand opening.
Pumping
event.
It on our show means that people will drop out, so.
Oh, that's right. So all you guys that want to get into the tournament, but it's too late, don't worry. We're talking about it on this podcast, so I'm sure a couple spots will open up pretty quick. It's on June 10th. It's 1,500 points. It's our farewell to 5th edition tournament.
Fantastic. All right, Scott, what about you?
Mostly just heavy gear. Decided to pick up a different minis game, more skirmish oriented, so. Been building and priming up some northern minis, as well as doing a little bit of touch-up work on my Firestorm stuff. Getting reacquainted with the rules and getting started again with that game.
Fantastic. And you play Directorate as well, don't you?
That's correct. Gotta love the crab people.
Yeah, virtual high five on a podcast. Woo! I'm just going to make the sound effect. That was a button.
Okay.
I didn't just do that. It's not that cheap. It was a pre-rendered sound effect. I hit a button on my laptop to make it work. So, let's drink some scotch and talk a little bit about higher learning, which for this episode, since Nathan's not here, is going to be some Firestorm Armada. We're going to talk a little bit about the Mark II ships and the rules that were released for them. What you may have noticed on the Spartan Games website is that their resources page has not been updated since the Dreadnoughts and Destroyers, so the majority of the rules are not available right now. So the only times you would have seen them is there are a couple websites that have full PDFs online with all of those Mark II rules, and if you've gone into stores that sell them and actually are able to look at the cards, you can see the Mark II rules there as well. The interesting thing about the Mark II ships is that they're not really that different from the Mark I's of those specific versions. And kind of what I feel is really interesting about this is when they released the pictures of the Mark II ships, it kind of brought up a big question of, well, why? Why Mark II? Like, why just remake the same ship with a slightly different model? Which is almost kind of weird to think, because if you think about Games Workshop and other hobby companies, that's the norm. Releasing new versions of the same model that are just slightly better is the norm for something like Warhammer 40,000. We get like a new Marine box every few years, or we get, you know, unless you're Eldar, new models every so often.
Or a new book.
Or a new book every so often.
Oh, Eldar, you know? Eldar players don't get a new book. They just get the book from 2 editions ago, and it's called new.
Mm-hmm. But what it basically amounts to...
We have always been at war with East Asia.
What it basically amounts to is if you would look at new model releases for fantasy, for instance, for Warhammer, skeletons is a great example for Tomb Kings. You've got the old skeletons and new skeletons. It's a marked improvement. They look very different. They look very much better. But you play them on the table and they're essentially the same model. So what do you guys think about the idea of releasing Mark II ships for Firestorm Armada? But in terms of the stats, I can tell you right now, we'll kind of go into them a little bit more. But in terms of the stats, they're only moderately different. There's only about a 10, it's basically a 5 to 15 point increase in terms of the point cost of the ships, but they virtually fill the exact same roles they filled before. They're just nicer, newer ships.
You know, it's funny because when I heard there's Mark II stuff, I bought all my Firestorm stuff about June last year, maybe May last year, and I just haven't gotten around to doing it. So it's just like, oh, fuck me. So now I have to go out and buy all kinds of new stuff because I'll be playing with the welfare-looking, you know, ships. I get to be the ghetto fleet. Fuck
yo seashells. No, yeah.
No, and then I saw that. It's like, no. There's Mark II is actually, they're different ships. They look a little nicer. They're a little cooler. They're also different points value. So it's sort of like if you have first-gen ships, they're still totally valid. And I think there's a very smart move on their part. That's usually companies are just like, no, you need to ante up and, you know, update your stuff. Unless you want to look like a loser. No, that's totally cool. If you don't have self-respect, that's fine by us. Go for it.
Hey, it's no big deal. You know, I'm vegan.
You know, hey, if you want all your Marines to be single cast and have one pose, that's totally cool. Like, it's still totally legit, loser. You know, like it's and they didn't pull that. And I thought that was actually really, really quite awesome. So at some
That's point, right. There is peer pressure in Warhammer as well. It's just more of the model variety. Oh, you have old Terminators. All right, I guess that's okay. You know,
yeah, hey, as long as they're on 40 mil bases, it's all the same, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, what about you, Scott?
Honestly, the aesthetic improvement was enough for me. Like, I'm looking at the Erosion Imperium Defiler cruisers.
Oh my god,
now,
hey.
And they're nothing but gorgeous.
Well, those aren't Mark II, so let's stay on fucking topic, all right?
Well,
god
it's Kyle's
damn it.
Fault.
I know it's your first time on the show, but Jesus Christ, could you at least for a moment try to act like this is, you know?
They have strict standards on this show. Keep it together, man.
Sorry to ruin your serious business podcast. no, like the Mark II stuff looks good. My knowledge of the game is pretty limited, but
well, that's okay. I agree with you guys there. Definitely it was one of those things that I felt it was very interesting from even a fiction standpoint and a fluff standpoint, because if you really think about it, you're not going to see an update to a fleet in the middle of a war where they're just like, oh yeah, new cruisers, we're completely rethinking ourselves. All they're really doing is updating the tech. They're maybe updating the way the ship looks a little bit, you know, like even in normal Navy of like today on this planet, as in not fiction, you know, when they update a ship and it's a newer model of a ship, there's not a ton that's different, you know? So yeah. I like that idea that from a fiction standpoint, they kind of look at it and they say, well, you know, they're not getting rid of the old ships and those ships are still in service, but they're just not making that old model anymore. I think if you look at the, let me just scroll up here because they've renamed them, right? So if I look at the cruisers, right, like there's the Chironex Aquin cruiser and then the Storm class cruiser, right? So, you know, they've basically looking at these things saying like, well, you know what, the Aquins, they've stopped building the Storm class cruiser. There's thousands of them out there still taking part in the war, but they are, you know, not necessarily a defunct model, but they are out of production. And now what we're doing is we're building this new Mark II cruiser and it's got slightly better things here and there, but it is essentially the same cruiser. I actually really like that idea. It also kind of brings into a different aspect of the game where you kind of look at the old Terran cruisers where they're really boxy. They don't kind of have the same look as the newer ones and the Dreadnought and like even the new Razorthorn battleship. And you actually kind of look at them and they look old. You know, I love that idea where it's just like, oh yeah, it's that old, you know, broadside, you know, iron sides type ship that's still out there in service, still trudging along like the little engine that could. I like that idea. I think there's a lot of personality in that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's, I think they really handled themselves in a pretty classy way. And, you know, I think it's a good play because guys are going to keep using some of their old stuff and they're not going to care, but they're also going to be like, oh, I totally want to get the new stuff. And it ends up being something different as opposed to, you know,
the old stuff obsolete.
Yeah, you know, you've got old looking models on the board, well, that's crap. You know, you should be using the newer versions. It's like, oh no, the newer versions are separate ships entirely, so you can have some old cruisers with new cruisers, and that actually gives your fleet its own flavor right there, which is kind of really cool.
Yeah, well, and also what I find really interesting for the way that they did the Mark IIs is that the majority of the Mark IIs don't really stand out. What you're basically getting for a 5 to 10 point increase is maybe some slightly better guns at certain range bands and an additional movement inch or an additional assault point or things of that nature. they're really not giving you game-breaking stuff, you know, like the Directorate aren't suddenly getting an extra assault point on their cruisers or anything like that. But it is something that really does make up for some of the shortcomings of the current fleets. For instance, I'm just going to break down some of the stuff for the Aquans here, and we'll kind of come back and talk about it. The Mark II Aquan battleship has an additional shield, an additional fighter wing, and some slightly better guns at range band 4. Its torpedoes are also strength 7 at range band 3 and 4, strength 5 at 1 and 2, so you're actually getting a split more like the Terrans. If I go down here as well, we can see that the Mark II carrier has an additional fighter wing. It has slightly better guns, but that's pretty much where it ends. So it's only a 5-point increase. If I go back up here, I'll tell you.
And they also have those hentai tentacles.
Yes, hentai tentacles in space for the win. I mean, that's just...
I mean, I'm really curious what ship they're going to rape with those tentacles, but... But hey, whatever. I mean, it's all good, right?
More than likely Reloza, because that's
all. Come on, someone back me up here.
Just in your own mind there, Kyle. But yeah, it's a 20-point increase for the battleships. You're going from 200 points to 220 points. If you count the wings on top of that, it comes out at 240. So you can still fit a fair amount of them in a relatively decent-sized game. The carrier, like I said, not much different there. The Mark II cruiser is really what's interesting for the Aquans. It's got basically the exact same stats. It actually has slightly reduced weapons batteries on some of the arcs that you're not necessarily going to use. Your main arc is still going to be as good as it needs to be. But if I page down here to the original one, oh, I'm sorry. No, your port and starboard also have an additional weapons battery. It goes from strength 4 to strength 5. Now, from somebody who plays the game, that's not a huge improvement. When it comes down to linking fire, you're only getting one additional dice total. When you've got weapons batteries 4 on the side and you link fire, you're going to roll 8 dice. This just means you're going to roll 9. So it's not a drastic improvement, and that's why the 10-point increase on those ships is not amazing. What really stands out for the Mark II cruiser is the fact that it has a shield. Now, the only thing that has shields on cruisers is the Terran fleet right now, but now the Mark II has one shield on its cruiser. So if you're an Aquan player, it really does kind of make that Mark II stuff a little bit more attractive. Now, not necessarily a must, but definitely a little bit more attractive. What do you think about that, Kyle?
I don't like the look of the cruiser. I'm kind of stuck on that. I keep looking at it. I'm just like, you know, I'm glad to know that it's not awesome compared to the other stuff. I'm sad to hear that I get an extra shield, so I might have to buy some, but they are not compelling at all. I mean, all the Mark II stuff, I think, is really, really nice. I think the Aquan... The look of the Aqua Mark II cruiser is like the weakest out of all their Mark II stuff. Mm-hmm. I just don't like them. So I just can't get too excited about all those stats when I look at... I don't even know what to say the thing looks like. I just don't like it. Looks like some sort of mouth is spitting out some bits of shell or
this
something.
This is the sea slug puking up its own stomach.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So I'm just like, you know, I'm not sure which is the front and which is the back. And if it's not much different in points and not much better... I'll just stick with the old ones because I do think the old ones are kind of slick. I think the Aquans are one of the fleets where the old stuff still looks really good. The new battleship is awesome. The new carrier is very, very nice. The Barracuda frigates, I think they're okay. I'm ambivalent, but
they're kind of interesting in the sense that they're the exact same points as the other ones. Basically, all you get out of the Mark II class frigate is an assault point, and that is it.
Yeah,
it is the exact same ship. It's the exact same point cost. You basically just get an assault point. So, I mean, all in all, it's a free upgrade. It's definitely worth taking. But again, it's not game breaking because you're still not going to be doing a lot of boarding actions with these guys. Even with a squad of 4, it's not necessarily worth it to be running in trying to do boarding actions. So really, that's where that kind of lands. Now, I'm not going to go into a lot of the other fleets here because most of them are about the same. You're getting usually an additional point of movement, an additional crew point, or an additional bit of point defense. The other one that stands out here is the Terrans. And I'm going to quickly jump down to the Terrans here.
I think the Terran stuff looks really sick. I mean, and that's how I always buy everything is I take a look at what they look like. And if it's pretty engaging that way, I'm just like, yeah, okay, sign me up. I try and buy the better stuff in there, but I don't let their performance stop me from buying more of the stuff. And that's, I think that's why I like the Aquans as much as I do, is because there's a lot of good cool lines of thought with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, them and the Ceruleans are the ones I think are the strongest in the design aspect of just cool looking spaceship stuff.
Right. All right. So for the Terran Mark II Apollo class battleship, as opposed to the Razorthorn battleship, it is basically the same setup. You get an additional point of movement. You are also looking at an additional crew point on top of that. Outside of that, your guns are essentially the same on all arcs, and your torpedoes are the same on all arcs. So it really is only a 5-point increase. It is nice to have the additional crew point because one of the problems with shields is that it does jack shit to a boarding action. So having that additional crew point is actually quite good for keeping your ships going. And even though you've got the flechette defenses as one of your MAR rules, usually if you're playing Terrans, you're going to be playing a mixed fleet with some of the Alliance of Kurok stuff, just because there's a lot of great stuff that you can mix in there and make really good with your shield cruisers. So usually you do want to have the additional crew points. So, you know, for a 5-point upgrade, it's good. But honestly, I like the old Razorthorn better aesthetically. I think it just looks cooler. I love the way it looks. Yeah. The new one looks cool. Don't get me wrong. It looks a lot more like their Dreadnought, but I like the idea of all the Terran stuff kind of looking different. I liked the fluff of, well, yeah, you know, it's Terran, so a different company makes each ship differently. So each of them kind of makes the ships look completely their own.
The old Razorthorn channels a lot more Star Destroyer. Maybe that's where your leaning is going.
I think it's there's better detail in the new one, but the old one is just a nicer looking ship.
Yeah, absolutely. I would have to agree with that. Okay, so the other thing is the cruiser. That's the other big one that stands out for them. It's not a ton different. You get an additional 1 firepower on your starboard and your port at range band 4, as opposed to 0, which means that at range band 4, you're going to roll 3 dice. I mean, it's worth it to take those pop shots early in the game. Sometimes you can drop or put a point of damage on a frigate with it. So there's nothing wrong with the extra dice. What's really interesting here is it's actually -1 movement. So they go from movement 8 to movement 7, but they have 5 hull points instead of 4. Everything else is the same, but you get an additional hull point. You still have the shield, which is really interesting here because it's a 10-point upgrade, which is really nice because it does make your cruisers much more survivable. Normally only heavy cruisers have 5 or 6 hull points. So it's an interesting upgrade for 10 points. And again, most people tend to like the way the new cruisers look. Again, I like the old ones. I like the old boxy shape, looking like you know, like the original Battlestar Galactica Battlestar type look. I love the way that looks. Yeah, that's just me.
Yeah, I think the new cruisers are definitely beefy and they're very cool looking. I see what you're saying with the Battlestar Galactica look of the old ones. You know, I can only comment on how things look because I haven't played yet. So,
well, I mean, in terms
I can only talk about the looks of so many ships so many times before I'm saying all the same shit time after time after time.
Well, in that case, let's move on.
All right.
To the main topic of today's show. If you guys have any other questions about Firestorm Armada, feel free to send me an email or just start up a chat on Facebook. But for the most part, those are the highlights of the Mark IIs. The other Mark IIs, like I said, it's very straightforward. There's not a whole lot to note there. All right. So, moving on to the main topic of today's show, let's talk flyers for Warhammer 40,000. How's that sound, guys?
That sounds fantastic.
That sounds like a freaking pro conversation, if you ask me. All right.
Whatever that means.
I talked about this before, not last episode, but it was the episode before where we were talking about kind of what is 40K missing. You know, at this point, what does the game need to really become more exciting and take advantage of the fact that there's this massive player base that is essentially starving for more and more detail and more tactical
I would think
option
the answer to, that
to make
is,
everyone understand how brilliant they are.
The answer to that is random charge distances and random psychic powers.
Yeah, let's not forget the psychic powers.
Damn right.
Anyways.
It's all rumors right now, but I love it.
Anyways. Me and Scott were having this conversation earlier today. I'm not convinced that flyers are the way because I've seen Workshop shit the bed with flyers enough times that I'm just like, you know what? I'll wait till I see what the rules are like and I'll wait a year to see how it all plays out before I give a firm yes or no to it. Because, I mean, there is a point when flyers move 6 inches per turn. There is a time when Warlord Titans move 6 inches per turn. And I just and they've done it enough times, time after time, that I'm just like, we'll just let's see what comes out of the wash before anything else. I am very excited about the kits. Rules-wise, I'm always hesitant. It just sort of seems they keep building air-to-air air combat fighters, and then they throw them into a ground combat game.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's interesting. This month's White Dwarf did have the rules for the Storm Talon gunship and the Orc Fight-A-Bama, or the Daka ship, or whatever the fuck it's called. Scorch-A-Bama, Death Diva, Doom Wag kit. Any one of those is an acceptable answer to all of the ramblings that I just threw out there. But let's first start off with the Storm Talon gunship and talk a little bit about the rules and kind of how you feel it's going to fit into your typical Space Marine army as it stands right now, and talk about how you feel it's going to fit into 6th edition Space Marine armies, because it does seem like all of the things that we're seeing for 6th edition are gearing toward having people change their lists quite drastically. Like, they are breaking the metagame and basically forcing people to build that metagame back up from scratch.
I like the thing a lot. I've heard nothing but bad comments about the thing's aesthetic, but I was the guy that liked the Storm Raven, so clearly I don't know what I'm talking about anyway.
Yeah, you've got no taste, like, but you know what? It's nice to have a dissenting opinion from somebody with no taste, because it adds to the show.
Well, what's the old adage? There's no accounting for taste.
Thank you. I like the thing a lot. I don't know that it does anything for 130 points that a squad of land speeders couldn't do, but
it can escort.
Nice.
It can escort shit on the table.
I guess so. Do you think that's particularly relevant?
No, not at all. Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Like, it's hard to look at this and say, oh yeah, it's so much better than a land speeder, but really for 130 points, it's a bit of a stretch for me. I would be hard pressed to fit it into a Space Marine list, especially since I don't particularly like the way that it looks. It's something that really I kind of have to shake my head at and go, you know what? Nope, I've got so many options right now in the Space Marine book. This is just going to fall under my third string worth of choices, you know? I'm definitely not going to try to force it into a list, that's for sure. But
actually, I think you're pretty much bang on there. I think what we're going to see is a flash in the fry pan unless 6th edition comes out and it's so radically different that suddenly you need as much air power as possible. I think this is kind of pointing that direction a little bit, and I'll get a little bit more into why I think that as we move onto other topics. But I think that's the one way it could be. I kind of wonder if this isn't going to be one of the nails in the coffin for the land speeder.
Yep.
Is that when we see a 6th edition, if the rules go in the kind of direction that I'm thinking, suddenly land speeders are going to be, you know, you're clearly a ghetto retard if you're using a land speeder, because you should be actually using a real live flying airship rather than, you know, a bumper car.
I don't know. I think the thing's relevant right now, because if only for the reason that it's a fast attack choice. I mean, you look at the rest of the Marine fast attack options, and you get what? You get land speed.
Do you think it's kind of like a Marine version of the Hellhound, where they throw into fast attack, it actually doesn't really belong there, but they put it there, and that way it's actually kind of good?
I guess so. I mean, the thing's a fast skimmer. I don't really know where else I'd put it.
Yeah.
I'm beginning to wonder how many times you're going to see this thing with the Skyhammer launcher, which is the glorified autocannon, hanging out with 3 autocannon dreads. I'm already foreseeing some shenanigans going on there, but I guess we'll see.
Well, it doesn't have rending, does it?
No, but it's the Skyhammer.
It only has 3 shots on 4, right?
Yeah, strength 7, AP 4, trip shot. So.
Oh, you said autocannon, not assault cannon. Sorry, brain not work, scotch now.
No, it's cool.
Glorious scotch. But I should probably fill up my glasses.
I think the only special rule that I was looking at on this one that seemed a bit strange to me was the ceramite plating. Isn't it strange to see that rule on something like a fast flyer?
If it's going to be the short bus's little brother, it has to share its gruesome deformity. I don't know.
I think this is how they say it's not a land speeder. This thing clearly flies down from orbit, and when you can deflect the heat of the atmosphere of a planet from burning you up, clearly weapons grade heat weapons will have no effect on you either.
But
I mean,
if
that's
it comes
why
down from orbit, it has turbines. Turbines don't work in space.
They sure don't.
But the Marines have nothing but contempt for you and your space and physics.
Oh my God, my brain is broke.
And aerodynamics.
Oh Jesus Christ.
And landing just right on the tail.
And and landing gear and weapons. It's perfectly natural. Perfectly natural.
Oh, it's the ugly duckling, to say the least. You know what? I feel like I'm going to see a couple of them, but we're definitely not going to see a huge surge of people buying 2 and 3 of them at a time. I think that the best you're going to get is people buying one for a novelty.
this is why I wonder what's coming down the tubes for 6th edition, is because it totally is like an add-on. It feels like, you remember when they did the spearhead rules for 40K of, tank armies?
Yep.
And suddenly there's all these tanks. Everyone bought a couple tanks, and then 2 months later, everyone's just like, fuck, what was I thinking? It was like a really bad binge night of drinking, right? You're just like, what was I thinking? Oh, well, it's over. It doesn't matter. And I'm kind of wondering if that's what this will be, unless, of course, 6th edition comes out with rules that really make stuff like this super important.
Well, I think just primarily it's going to be the idea of how fast it's moving. A lot of the things that we've seen for the leaked 6th edition rules from before, I don't know if they actually exist in the ones that currently are out there, but the idea that stuff that's moving quite fast is that much harder to hit. Yeah. And that is going to be another big boon for these types of vehicles, even though they've got such low armor. It's going to be the fact that, well, you know what? Yeah, he's got one shot with his last cannon, but it's that much harder to shoot him out of the air.
Well, I also think I heard in 6th edition that like all the armies being raised to 2,000 points and Marines are being lowered to, what, 4 points each? So it makes a lot of room for all these vehicles.
Oh, that's just a great idea. I mean, you know what? By all means. Oh, fuck me.
Each guardsman will be a quarter point, I hear.
So upgrades, like we said, it was 130 points. The upgrades are all quite expensive. So 20 points for Twin Link Glass, 25 points for Typhoon Missile Launcher, 25 points for the Skyhammer Missile Launcher. I wouldn't necessarily say that any of those are worthwhile.
No, the points for the upgrades, I think, is what kills the thing. Yep. I would love to run two of these things and feel good about it. But at the same time, you get an ironclad and a drop pod, and that thing's going to lift twice this thing's weight for a few more points.
Well, yeah, and I think that's really talking about the way the game is played currently in 5th edition, right? You would want to have this with Twin Link Last because you want as much anti-tank as you can possibly fit on the table in 5th edition, and that makes it a little bit strange when you start looking at it for 150
last
points.
The Last Cannon is cheaper than the other two upgrades.
Right, exactly.
Like, when has that ever been the case?
Okay, so I think that's our verdict on that for the most part. It's got basically the same rules as the rest of the flyers that we're going to see today, which is aerial assault, meaning that if it moves at cruising speed, which I believe is what, 12 inches?
I think so.
12 inches?
Yeah, I think jets move about twice as fast as a person walks. I think that's how it works.
That's exactly how it works, actually.
That's why jets are so deadly, because they are twice as fast as me.
But yeah, if you're moving at cruising speed, you can fire all of your weapons in the same turn. It also has supersonic, which means it can move up to 30 inches or 36 inches.
I think it's 36.
36 inches, yeah. In one turn, which is very useful. But okay, let's move on to the Orc Flyer rules. These are pretty straightforward. There's some very interesting things here. But what I really want to kind of touch on is the Dacajet, the rules specifically for the Dacajet. And I'm going to switch to this so I can zoom in. There we go. Aerial assault, strafing run, supersonic, and plane. You can give this thing 3 twin-linked super shooters, which is basically the same stats as a shooter, but with an additional strength. Anything that it's strafing that is not a skimmer, a normal unit, or bikes or something like that, it basically gets an additional ballistic skill for it. So it's actually an orc ship with a lot of shots that's firing at ballistic skill 3.
And if you get a 10-point ace upgrade to make the thing ballistic skill 3 base. So this is like a marine if you shoot with the right thing.
Yeah.
Ballistic skill increase on Fida Ace is only for the things that it does not include in its basic strafing run rule.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not actually making a ballistic skill 4 against everything else. It's just ballistic skill 3 against everything for an additional 10 points, or ballistic skill 3 against the other crap.
Yeah, I still think it's pretty awesome. I think it's kind of cool that orcs are getting, I think the orcs are getting a good deal out of this, at least with the Dacajet. Mm-hmm. It's kind of nice to see, because orc players talk lots about how their whole book sucks all the time.
Isn't that a high points value? Or?
I think 110 points was a single bargain.
I was going to say, I think 110 feels kind of nice.
Well, I think, you're going to look at this at the full points cost, which is going to be 135.
You're orcs, you're not going to care about 135 points.
No, 135 points really isn't anything. And I think that that's why we are going to see people showing up with at the stores buying two of these at a time, because it really is the anti-troop vehicle that you can take. I mean, you're still going to take your battle wagons, but you're maybe going to throw those trucks out, or you're going to throw some of those other, additional things like Killicans out of there, and just stick to these and stick to the fact that they're going to be shooting shit up.
I mean, as much as I shit talk the Eldar Codex, the one thing it does have is a proliferation of strength 6 weapons. And when guys use that well, everyone's shocked at just how much strength 6 comes out, gets spit out by the Eldar army. And suddenly we've got this one plane that spits out how many strength six shots at, you know, at needing basically four up.
Nine.
Yeah, like that is, you put two of those in your, like it's really, really cool because you're going to, it really gives orcs this neat ability where guys show up. I mean, throw this up against this guy with Nurgle Marines, and that guy's going to be shocked the first time he encounters it, unless he's read the rules and knows exactly what he's up against before the game starts.
Well, and it's AP4. It's AP4, so fuck Tau.
Yeah.
Well, that's not really
the only.
Thank God we have something to deal with the Tau at last.
Oh, Tau Jesus Christ! I mean,
the Tau Metis.
I think it's a very interesting ship to take, just for the fact that it's not really filling any specific role that the army's failing at. It's just something cool that you're able to put into your list as opposed to something else that you were using for almost the same thing. You kind of follow what I'm saying there? Like, it's a good replacement for the crap that you already have that maybe you only take because you have to take it. Like, you still are going to take a lot of the other anti-tank things in that army because they're your only options. So that's going to be very common still. But these are actually a very cool way to kind of mix and match a little bit, which I think is pretty fun. And with the changes that look to be coming down the line with charge ranges and like stand and shoot stuff like that, this type of shooting vehicle might actually be very useful for you in 6th edition.
Well, and as far as orcs go, it's armor 10, but the thing's not open top. Like, it's reasonably tough. I think it could take a bit of a beating.
That is true. No, I think it's cool.
Yeah, I think it's very cool. So let's talk a little bit about the Burnabomber here and the Blitzabomber. I think both of these are interesting choices. I mean, they're not that much more expensive, but it all kind of comes down to the fact that you're going to be using template weapons and you've got a little bit of shooting, but it's not an amazing amount of shooting. You still have the same aerial assault rule, which is great. You still have the same supersonic and WA plane rule. Oh, you know what? Let's stop and talk about the WA plane rule. In any turn which the orc army declares a WA, it gets to shoot its weapons twice. So for the
So the Dacajet turns into extra awesome right off the bat.
Dacajet is the one that stands out as being the most awesome out of any of them. And because you are essentially using the Burnabomber and the Blitzabomber with one-shot only bombs that you're going to have access to, the WA plane thing doesn't necessarily mean a ton with them. It means you get to fire the Twin Link Big Shooter, the Twin Link Super Shooter one an additional time that turn, but it's not really the reason why you're taking it.
Yeah.
The Blitzabomber is kind of the interesting one in the sense that it's got this kind of dive attack special rule that's only good if you roll a 10, 11, or 12.
Yeah. No, we were looking at that. Well, you know, we want to make sure that no one wants to build this part of the kit, I guess. It's too bad because really the dive bomb is the coolest looking of the three sort of aspects of like the model that you build, like with the air brakes and everything. Like that's fucking awesome. But I guess it gets to blow up always, so that's not so cool.
It's just a lot to pay for something that you're banking on dying. It's like, oh, either please.
Oh, hey,
do
it's also
well.
The most expensive of everything. That's fantastic.
Yeah. No, absolutely. 140 points if you take the red paint job, even though why would you take the red paint job when you know this thing is just going to crash into the ground? Same thing as before. It's a fast skimmer. It's got a twin link super shooter. It's got a big shooter that gets fired by a grot at ballistic skill 3. And it's got two big boom bombs, which are strength 7 AP4. I mean, really, if they made the boom bomb AP3, I would definitely think about it.
You know, and I think that's what it begs for is something that's so awesome that sort of is the payoff that, you know, the crashing almost always is the price you pay for that kind of awesome.
Yes.
And instead they give you something that's pretty good that says to you, well, the strength is you get to do this several times. And when actually, well, no, you don't get to do it several times. You get to crash.
You get to do it once or you get to crash because that's the thing. Once you're out of bombs, you're out of bombs.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know if I'd rule out the two dice for armor 10. Like that's sort of a
nice I was looking at that when we were talking about it, and that strikes me as being really quite awesome, but it's a dice roll. So, well, I mean, strength 7, average 7.
See, but the problem is that in a game that's random game length, right, which is the majority of games you're going to play in Warhammer 40,000, right, you've got two bombs that you're allowed to fire, and you've got this ship that can essentially do nothing in a shooting phase when you need it to do something. The fact that two of the results mean that you don't drop the bomb is a really, really disappointing thing, right? Like, that's something that...
Well, it's that chart. It's the dice chart there, which makes it suck, because you could drop two bombs and then keep it around for last turn objective grabbing. I mean, and that would be okay. It would be sort of like, he's got kind of a big bit of thunder, and then he does nothing for the whole game.
Well, fast
and then
attack can't take objectives, can it?
No, but it can contest.
It can contest it. Okay, sure.
Yeah, sorry, I came out wrong. But anyways, what I'm saying is it could do stuff like that, but thanks to that handy-dandy chart, not only is he going to crash more often than not, but his bombs could even not work. So you get rid of all the goodness. And it's, you know, if it was 50 points, if they're like, oh, these things suck, but, you know, it's the risk you take, it'd be like, yeah, okay, for 50 points, I would totally take that
risk.
Oh,
yeah, like Snotling Pump
Wagons. I'll take it three times. Yes, please.
Yeah, Snotling Pump Wagons and Fantasy for the Orc Army. It's like, yeah. They cost next to nothing. They're super easy to kill. But like, oh yeah, they just go in, slam into something, and then that's when you just say, "Up and I'm done. I've got nothing left to do with these stupid things." But the fact that it's going to be 135 points is really, really hard to rationalize.
What do you think about the Burna one? That's the one that I'm most curious about how it'll be at the end of the day.
You know, you've got two options, right? Like, you've got the Burna Bomb and you've got the Scorcha Missile, and the Burna Bomb is interesting because you have to fly over something. You can't drop it when you're going flat out in the same turn, which I think is 24, or if you're going supersonic or anything like that. I'm sorry. Supersonic is flat out, which is 36. Yeah. Sorry. Which to me is a bit weird. Like, I would, if I'm going to take something like this, I kind of want to have something that I'm going to be able to use right out of the gates. Not necessarily something that I'm going to have to kind of try to plan for, you know, turn two or turn three to actually get what I need out of it. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. Things only got, you know, if it's making that small move, it's got what, a 12-inch move? I mean, good luck getting over top of a unit that's worth dropping the large blast on with a 12-inch move.
Well, exactly. And that's kind of why I lean a little bit more toward the Scorching Missiles. Yes, it's not the large blast, but, you know, if you're firing these at something that you intend to kill, whether it's large or small, you're actually going to feel a little bit better getting two shots off by turn two as opposed to maybe getting one shot off by turn two.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why I lean toward the Scorcha Missile. I think also, if I remember correctly, you can take up to 6 Scorcha Missiles on the Burna Bomba. Let me just zoom in here and actually see. Yeah. Yes, you can take up to 6 Scorcha Missiles for 10 points apiece. That's when it starts getting really expensive, though. Is the fact that you basically get 2 Burna Bombs for free, but you can take up to 6 Scorcha Missiles.
I think that one's going to come out when guys play it a lot, and guys will start figuring out what the correct number of Scorcha Missiles to take will be.
Yeah.
I think that's where it's going to be kind of interesting, like whether it's 2 or 4 or something like guys might, or I figure guys are going to figure it out. You know,
there's no way this thing is worth running at 185 points. There's,
well, I don't think anybody's going to take 6, man. No. Like, I don't think anybody's,
that's
kind of
what I mean,
be,
though, right?
I don't think anybody's going to be under the impression that by the end of the game,
it's for the,
turn
it's
6
for the
is
going to
roll around.
It's, you know, it's for the 12-year-olds and the 12-year-olds of mind.
Well,
so.
I mean, if you're using the WA, because it is a WA plane, then you do get to fire 2 of them in one turn.
That's true.
But so I mean, like, probably would be 3. I think 3 is going to end up being the magic number for these guys. But even at that point, you're looking at 155 points for this.
Yeah,
you're definitely going to want to give it the red paint job because
this
thing to be moving
edition,
to get the
orcs,
bombs into position.
In 6th edition, orcs are going to be like 1.5 points. So taking 2 or 3 of these at 155 points, you're not going to feel that.
Yeah, you're just putting all your eggs in the infantry basket.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, of course, once you bank up on your second squad of 8, I mean, that's where it'll start to tell. But I mean, it's 2,000 points. You still got a lot of room to fit a lot of those puppies in there.
You know, I think the easiest answer to this question is what is about 40 points cheaper than a Burna Bomber is a Daka Jet, and you're going to want to take one every time.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, absolutely.
No, I think that that's definitely going to be I don't think anybody's disputing the fact that the Daka Jet is heads and tails above everything else. You're going to want to take the additional twin-linked Super Shooter. You're going to want to take the red paint job. And you're probably going to take the Fighter Ace, if only for the fact that you get the additional ballistic skill when shooting against bikes and fast skimmers.
Well, it gives you consistency so you can choose which targets you want.
It's only jet bikes. The Ace is only jet bikes.
Jet bikes, fast skimmers, and what else?
I think that's it.
Hold on. You're lying.
He's looking it up. He's flipping the pages furiously.
I'm looking at it as well, and I think that you are a liar, sir. Hold on.
Jet bikes or vehicles with the skimmer type. That's it. I don't think the Ace is worth it.
Jet bikes or vehicles with skimmer. Well, see, but here's the thing, right? At strength 6 with a lot of shots, this thing's the perfect vehicle to take down skimmers and other flyers.
Yeah.
Right? And perfect. that's the reason why the strafing run has the rule that it has, excluding jet bikes and skimmers, is because you're gonna, what's it say? Shooting at artillery, beasts, bikes, cavalry, infantry, monstrous creatures, and vehicles without the skimmer rule. So I mean, for
boxer drives,
all but two of those, you're not even going to be shooting at this. You're not even going to be shooting this at vehicles or beasts or monstrous creatures, because that would be just a waste of shots.
I don't know. I don't know if my Demon Prince want to run in one of these things.
Demon Prince
doesn't want to run into anything at this point.
But really, I mean, yes, you're going to be shooting at infantry, so the strafing run is perfect. You probably are going to shoot at beasts if they show up with beasts on the table. You may or may not be shooting at bikes, depending on the fact that nobody takes bikes to begin with. So I think the idea of having it being able to shoot at jet bikes and skimmers, which it's going to be very effective against, is actually worth 10 points.
Yeah, and you know what? At 125 points, sorry, 135, I guess, with the extra shooter, this thing's still a bargain anyway.
Oh, by all means, yeah. I have to agree with that right there, is that at the points cost that we're getting right now, even if you add both of those upgrades, or all three of those upgrades, it is a great choice. All right, so any other last-minute comments about the flyers before I move on? Yeah. Because there is the Necron flyer, but we did already kind of talk about that when we talked about
the it's just more reviewing the model itself, I think, than actually the rules, because everyone's reviewed the Necron Codex enough that there's nothing that we can say that's going to be like, oh, well, that's have never thought of that before. That's never been said anywhere.
Well, I think everyone's been kind of chomping at the bit for this flyer and the
variations
of that flyer. So I think it's a great release for Games Workshop. They're going to make some money on it. And we're definitely going to see more and more of them in Necron armies for the most part.
And the best thing is, if you want to be able to go back and forth between the Doom side and the Knight side, all you need is a little magnet on the portal.
Oh, yeah. Like, that was just what I loved about it most, was the fact that it's very interchangeable. And that is
a huge
thing for Necron players. Considering that you've got a couple of builds where one of them is going to work really well for you and other builds where you're going to need to have that stupid death ray on your ship. So, you know, it's a good looking kit. I think Nathan said it was his favorite because it looked like a Cylon Raider.
I would argue it is a Cylon Raider, but but I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not willing to go that far just yet. But no, I think it's super cool. Like it's part of the whole Necron range. They're hitting it out of the park with their new stuff. Everything Necron. It may not have been the direction you thought you would have liked to seen it go, but none of it is bad.
No one's going to argue with those plastic kits.
Yeah.
No, I think that's definitely the case, is that when you kind of take a step back and take a good look at it, everything that we've currently seen for that range does stand out. Like, you may or may not like some of the aesthetics for some of the models. Like, I know personally, I'm not a big fan of the Ghost Ark. I'm not a big fan of the goofy platforms or anything like that. Some of the characters I'm not a big fan of, but
you know what I'm a big fan of? How, if when you put it upside down, it becomes a different thing entirely. I've started basing my Necron Warriors on their heads just to see if there's a different rule for that.
Turn them into immortals.
that's how you get pariahs back in your game. That's how you get pariahs back in your army.
That's what I hear, yeah.
All right, so...
No, but I think, you know, really, the Necron stuff is really nice. But yeah, I think we're done with the flyers.
Since we're rolling on to the end of the show, let's just chalk this right up to the stupidity check. Let's talk about this just as a quick side note here. Games Workshop has announced that they are undergoing another price increase.
See, we decided not to make the price increase the stupidity check, because it just means that... We all know that every year on June 1st, they're going to be insanely stupid, so it's not even worth pointing out anymore, other than giving people a sneak preview of what the prices are going to look like come June 1st.
Yeah.
Has anything been announced for the prices in country stand? Has anyone announced anything anywhere? Or, because, I mean, like, you get that the Storm Raven is now, June 1st, is going to be a $99 model kit, right?
Yeah. I think that's gone through the web like a wildfire right now. So I don't think anyone is kind of unaware of it the way that it stands. But, you know, I said this in one of the previous episodes here recently, is that I'm so used to the rules. And I'm sorry, not the rules.
All prices go up.
Yes, exactly. That is the rule. I'm so used to the price increases on a yearly basis that it isn't even a shocker for me anymore. It upsets me, it annoys me, but I am by no means sitting there going, oh, I'm not going to buy my crack anymore. I am suddenly no longer an addict. I'm just going to bitch about it and buy less of it less often. That's all it comes down to.
Well, it just turns into you end up looking at whatever, instead of starting a new army, you look at a new game to maybe play.
Mm-hmm.
Because the new game will cost, the whole new game will cost you less than a whole new army. And I think that's, I mean, that's what I'm seeing in the store I'm running and everything. Guys just like, huh, what's this game? What's it cost? I'm like, I bought a half a Marine army and that's the price now, you know, and guys are like, you know what? I'll maybe consider that.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and I think, well, I mean, and we'll see come July when they do the next financials, if that's the thing, but for 2 years in a row, they've been selling less. You know, their profitability may be up, but their volume is going down. So everybody everywhere is buying less. It's an undeniable fact. So,
well, I think the really interesting thing about it, and you had touched on this before, Kyle, is that, I mean, back in the day, and this wasn't too long ago, every time that they would do an increase, they would say, okay, well, we're increasing roughly 80% of the range, but that this other 20% is actually going down in price by a small fraction. It wasn't anything dramatic, and the price increases were very, very less noticeable. I mean, it was like a $2 increase per box, or, you know, like, you know, maybe a $1 increase per blister or something like that. So it wasn't bank breaking and people weren't yelling and screaming over it. Now they've kind of shifted gears and now it's 30% of the range goes up quite dramatically. And it's always the stuff that is new and selling well that is going up dramatically.
Well, I mean, the best part is, and best is in quotation marks, air quotes even, like Empire stuff is going up, stuff that just came out last month.
The new Necron fine cast characters are going up.
All going up. Which is ridiculous.
Which is just sort of like
And like I said, who was I talking to last week? Actually, I think it was Nathan I was talking to last week, and I said to him, you know, the only time that I ever actually got, like, really physically upset and annoyed with the price increase was when they increased the price of fine cast when it was released on kits that created. Actually, it was you that I was talking to, Kyle. It was just that whole idea of it's a cheaper medium, it's a cheaper product, and it's not as good, but we're going to charge you more for the exact same model because, oh my God, it's in resin. Ooh, fancy, fancy. I mean, it's not 8 years ago when we all looked at Forge World and said, oh, resin, oh, that's expensive.
Yeah, well, and it's funny because Forge World is starting to look like the deal.
Oh, it is. I mean, been looking like the deal for at least a year now.
And that's what I mean. Like, since when is Forge World, like Forge World used to be the rich man's stuff. You know what? Everything in Forge World costs $1 per point. And now it's sort of like, yeah, but everything in 40K. Oh, sorry, that's not fair. There are things in 40K which cost $2 per point. You know, and you're just like, ah, you know what? Maybe I'll check out some Forge World.
Yeah.
But I try not to be too down on it, but it's Workshop sure makes it hard.
Especially for somebody trying to run a store.
Yeah. It's just, well, you know, it's funny because when I set up with them, they were like, well, how much of your business do you think, you know, you want to do in Games Workshop? And we talked about this and that. And they're like, well, you know what? If you'd said anything above 25% of your business should be Workshop, we'd be telling you you're coming into the wrong business. And I'm just like, really? Like, that's you guys are basically telling people don't try and live off of our product? Like, wow. Like that. You know, I mean, I get it. It's them doing me a favor, making sure that, you know, I don't think that rainbows are going to come, you know, streaming out of people's pockets every time they enter the store. But the same breath, they purposely are making their products so that no one can make a living off of it.
Well, like, you know, I mean,
it's crazy.
It comes down to profitability, right? I mean, what you're buying it from your rogue trader and what you're selling it in your store for, as opposed to what they are selling it in their store for. And again, their biggest goal with independent retailers, and we talked about this a few times back when you were on the show, is that they're essentially trying to cut out independent retailers, you know, in favor of their own stores and in favor of their mail order, their direct order website. Just in these very subtle ways where they're, you know, they'll even tell you, like, oh, no, you really shouldn't do these things because, you know, we're looking out for you, but our products are great and you should be very proud of them. Just like that fine cast release.
I think so, but it's funny because it's, you know, to be fair, the Workshop deal they give, they actually, compared to a lot of guys in the industry, they have a decent profit margin. And man, there's no charge for shipping. Like, they do lots of things that are really, really cool, which I do like. It's just some other stuff. You're just like really going, really? Like you don't want me to make a GW store because it will not work. You guys are telling me it will not work. Like how, I mean, you know, the analogy I use, I work for Coca-Cola, and I'm selling you Coca-Cola, and I'm telling you, oh, for God's sake, make sure you carry Pepsi, because you want is Coca-Cola only in your store. I mean, that it seems to me that Coca-Cola is like, no, if you only carry Coca-Cola, don't you worry, you will make money. which, you know, and Workshop's like, oh, God, no, please don't. Good God, what are you thinking, Games Workshop? Get out of this business now. And, like, that just strikes me as very, very – it's nice that they give you a little bit of realism, but it strikes me as very backwards that is right out of the gates. They're just like, well, are you kidding me? No one can live off of Games Workshop sales.
Well, okay, here's what I'd like to bring up now before we kind of wrap this show up here. What I actually find a little bit disheartening out of the current price increase is that if I look back at the last – I'm going to go ahead and say 6 years of Games Workshop. Let's say 8 years. The last 8 years worth of Games Workshop price increases, it's going too quick, too fast, right? Like it's, and I know that was ridiculous, and I apologize for being that dumb to say it's going too quick, too fast. It's increasing too quickly to the point where it's becoming unmanageable, even for them. The prices are increasing to such a point that they can't sell it as a hobby anymore. They can't sell it as, oh, yeah, you can just get somebody into it and you can get into it. I mean, even the guys in the store, how do you sell to a parent saying that, oh, yeah, well, you know, you can get this starter kit for $135. And then if you really like the game, you can drop another $400 to get him into the range of points and paints and all those types of things to actually get him into the hobby, quote unquote, to the point where he's playing with everyone else who's in the hobby and not just somebody who's just starting up into it. I mean, that's an enormous amount of money to drop in a very short period of time for anything. And so it kind of turns this into a situation where when you start talking about Games Workshop, every sale is a hard sale. You're always hard selling people. You're always trying to push things on people because of the fact that I don't think there's a single person who I know who goes into a Games Workshop right now and says like, oh, yeah, you know, I dropped like $300. It's no big deal.
I think the tone of the game is shifting. I mean, when you used to sell Workshop product, you'd bill it as, this is no different than buying an Xbox 360 and a stack of games, you know? But now it's a lot more, it's less Xbox and games and more my dad's model train.
But the only selling feature is the fact that there's no monthly fee.
Yes. And I'm kidding, eh?
Just be glad your son's into this and not RC cars is the saving grace of Workshop. And I think they know that. And I think they're really like, well, there's more expensive hobbies out there. I mean, I'm not trying to be a hater here, but it is like the price increases are a little bit too fast and they're going up by not by $2 anymore. And every year it just feels a little bit more crazy. Like,
well, and that's my point is the fact that
something's got to support their habit of grinding down gold bullion and snorting it, right? Like, it's just
a $90 Land Raider isn't going to price people out of the miniatures hobby, but it's going to price them into other miniatures games.
Well, and that's, I think that's a
heavy
great point.
Gear or Firestorm, and that's where you end up is I can build a heavy gear army for $120.
Yeah, no, it's funny because we talk about heavy gear all the time. And it's like all their box sets for all their squads, they're 5-man squads. All of them are $40 to $50. So they're basically the same price as Workshop. You get half as much, but you're going to buy 3 boxes, maybe 4, and then you're done unless you're a completist and you kind of want a little bit of everything.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly it. I think for Firestorm Armada is another great example. And I think it's funny because I get asked quite often, oh, how much does it cost to get into Firestorm Armada? How much does it cost to kind of get everything that I want to start looking at? Actually, it only is going to cost you about $200, $250. You know, rulebook on top of that, maybe $300. And then at that point, you're virtually done unless you want to start building another fleet.
Unless you're going to go full bore and show everyone else that they're a pretender compared to
you. Well, and if you start waiting around for stuff to be released from Spartan Games, and they do release stuff quite regularly, there is going to be other things that you're going to want to pick up, but we're talking under $50 to pick up that new squad of 4 ships that you want to throw into your fleet, right? Like it is a very, very small upkeep for somebody who's a very interested gamer. I'm just going to keep talking because it says that there is currently a connection problem. And we are back. A second time, even. Oh, it's take two of the stupidity check for Jaded Gamercast. And this is what, episode 80? I think it's episode 80. I don't even know. It's Dana approved episode 80. Why the hell not?
Sure thing. Woo!
Yay! Oh my god, we're so excited. Yeah, this is episode 80. Fuck yes. All right, so let's just skip whatever the hell we were talking about before and get into the stupidity check yet again. For anybody who hasn't got it yet, my recording software crapped out, and after the call dropped, it did not record the actual ending of the show, so we are re-recording it for your pleasure. That's right, only the best here from Jaded GamerCast.
I keep recommending that Lang upgrades to Skype Pro. I hear it's really quite good.
Oh, fuck yourself. Oh, God, I fucking hate this crap. But anyways, I'm not even going to get into that conversation out of context.
Stupidity check. The stupidity check this week is about the Space Marine gunship.
Imagine that.
Now, it's like I said,
Storm Talon.
I think really it's not that the kit itself is bad. I've already said it's Kana. There's things I don't like, the things that are okay. Stupidity check is that they release the thing in alongside the awesome Orc Bomber kit and the even better Necron kit. And really, it's just nothing makes the Marine kit look extra dumb and second rate than being beside those things. They could have easily released it 2 months ago, and this month would have really felt like they're up in their game with even better kits. But no, they put three out at once, and everyone looks at the Marine one and just kind of says, like you're just taking it for granted that Marine players are going to buy stuff. Like it's not, you're not even trying to make them buy stuff. You're just putting it out there saying, it's Marine, buy it. You're dumb. Go.
Well, like I've said, you know, I mean, it's a compulsion with Marine players. It's kind of, they're banking more on the fact that as soon as they tell people that, oh, well, you know, a chapter has three of these, so if you want to have a full chapter, you know, that those people who have their full chapters are going to go out and buy the three just to make sure that they still have their full chapter. But it is definitely weird, especially due to the fact that it's been a pretty slow release schedule for Warhammer 40,000, so it would be very easy for them to kind of stretch this out over to like two or three months.
This could not have been a month ago.
Well, exactly. I mean, they are catering to people with specific armies, but whereas the Orc Phytobama and the Necron Battlestar Galactica Cylon Raider will grab people's attention and maybe make some people look at that and go, hey, you know what? I kind of want to start a Necron army now, or I kind of want to start an Orc army now. They're going to look at the runty short bus piece of garbage and say, I pass.
Well, no, they'll say, you know, I always did think the Storm Raven should have been more short and less lengthy.
And less aerodynamic.
And more squat. And, you know, this Storm Talon gunship fits all those bills. I was going to convert my Storm Raven without any back tail, but now I don't have to.
It's okay because this one lands on the back tail and its turret.
That's right. I hear the best thing about autocannons is assault cannons is that they make great landing gear.
That's where part of the thrust goes into.
That's a line from MacGyver. You know, it's like the best thing about chewing gum is it makes a great explosive. The best thing I get about my Gatling gun is that you can land on it real good. supports the full weight of a gunship, believe it or not. But anyways, like I said, I actually don't hate the kit. It's just that it really looks like the dumb kit.
It's just a weird choice. Because they didn't even paint it as being like, it's Flyer February or some shit like that. Like, it was very much just like, here's three flyers, guys. Guess what? Flyers are important. I think that was really all I took away from this episode. Flyers are important. Here you go, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, well, like I said, in the mysteriously dropped part is the Marine thing really looks like the cheapo action figure flyer for the parents who couldn't
afford the Chinese ripoff.
Yeah, we can't. Looks like we're not going to buy the Millennium Falcon. Here's the XV-29 that Luke Skywalker did never fly in any of the movies. There you go. The
Marines get Christmas in the ghetto and everyone else gets to.
They're a bunch of poor bastards with the Bespin cloud car.
Look, your action figure, your Marine action figure almost fits entirely inside the flyer. Look at that. But no, seriously, like I said, I don't actually hate the kit. It's just what a dumb choice it was to put it beside two very well executed kits, because nothing shows off its shortcomings. You see what I did there?
But isn't that what Games Workshop does best at this point? Is just release kits that are amazing beside kits that are actually kind of weird and strange and poorly designed.
Fair point. Sir? Yeah, no, absolutely. We should not be surprised, but that doesn't make it any less stupid.
Now the Marine aesthetic has decided it needs to be flying bricks with turbines and landing gears on guns. There's no getting around it, but...
I used to play bass for landing gears on guns.
Yeah, well, that band sucked. Come on.
Well, that's why it was very short.
That's why I quit.
That's why I quit. That's why I said used to. That is Jaded Gamercast for this week. Again, my name is Lang. Again.
I'm Kyle.
And Scott.
Have a good one.